Today's Taisho is on case one in the Haikigan Roku, the Blue Rock Collection. Emperor Wu asks Bodhidharma. Engo's introduction. Smoke over the hill indicates fire. Horns over the fence indicate an ox. Given one corner, you can grasp the other three. One glance, and you discern the smallest difference. Such quickness, however, is only too common among robed monks. When you have stopped the deluded activity of consciousness, then whatever situation you may find yourself in, you enjoy perfect freedom in adversity and prosperity, in taking and in giving. Now tell me, how in fact will this sort of person behave? See Secho's complications. Main subject. Emperor Wu of Liang asked Putitamo, Bodhidharma, what is the first principle of the holy teachings? Bodhidharma said, emptiness, no holiness. Who is this standing before me? Asked the emperor. Not knowing, said Bodhidharma. The emperor did not grasp his meaning. Thereupon, Bodhidharma crossed the river and went to the land of Wei. The emperor later spoke of this to Shiko, who said, do you in fact know who this person is? The emperor said, not knowing. Shiko said, this is the Bodhisattva Kanon, Guan Yi, the bearer of the Buddha's heart seal. The emperor was full of regret and wanted to send for Bodhidharma, but Shiko said, it is no good sending a messenger to fetch him back. Even if all the people went, he would not return. Secho's verse, the holy teaching? Wuxin, Muxin. What is the secret here? Again, who stands before me? Not knowing. The figures in this koan are quite familiar to anybody who knows anything about Chinese or Japanese Buddhism. Putitamo, or Bodhidharma, or Daruma, was the monk who brought Chan, or Zen, to China. And he was, according to the records, possibly from south of India. And other records indicate that he may have come from Persia. He may have come as far away from as from Persia. But most people think he was from South India, maybe Tamil Nadu area of India. So he was quite accomplished. Practitioner of the Dharma in India, and he decided to, for reasons that we may never know, decided to come to China and teach the Dharma in China. At this time, already there were many monks and nuns and great scholars of Buddhism in China. As you are well aware, the Chinese had a brilliant civilization even before Buddhism arrived on the scene. And when Buddhism began to arrive in China, the Chinese were quite intrigued by this. There were some connections to Taoism, And they understood almost immediately the beautiful path that Buddha Dharma opened up for them. So there was quite an interest, even initially in China, in Buddhism. And there were many translators who came to China, and teachers from India, and many different schools were represented in China at this time. What we call the Chan, or Zen school, was not represented at all. And so Putitamo, Daruma, came to from India to China to introduce people to this particular school. At least this is the story, this is the traditional way of thinking about it. Now, the truth is that there really is no such thing as the Chan school. There really is no such thing as Zen. There is simply the practice of the way, the Tao. And really, the people in China who created Zen, who created Chan, didn't think of what they were doing as Chan. They thought of it as Tao, as the Buddha's way, Dharma. And they thought they were pursuing enlightened mind and helping other people to pursue enlightened mind. What we call Chan or Zen was just expedient means, just a way of achieving that goal. But not everybody perhaps saw things that way. In India, there was a great deal of rivalry between different traditions of Buddhism. There's some evidence that that was the case sometime. And when monks and nuns came to China, they were competitors for patronage. So there were already quite a few schools of Buddhism represented, and many of them were based upon the study of scripture rather than Zen practice, rather than meditative practice. Some of them were based upon devotion. And Emperor Wu of Liang, had met some of these monks and nuns who taught Buddhism based upon devotion and scriptural study. And so he was very taken with Buddhism. He believed in its truth. And as an expression of his commitment to Buddhism, to the Dharma, he built many monasteries and nunneries and temples, stupas, monuments, and so on and so on. And he believed that by doing these good deeds, he was bringing himself closer to good karma, purifying his karma, and getting closer to Buddha nature by building temples, doing good deeds, sustaining the Sangha through donations. And this was his belief, and he was surrounded by people who encouraged him in this belief. Now, Bodhidharma came from India, and for some reason he was able to arrange for a meeting with the emperor. So the emperor was expecting, traditionally these monks wore very fine robes. If you've seen ancient cave paintings in China of Indian monks, they often have quite beautiful robes. You know, probably the monks who went to court, who met the emperor, dressed up very beautifully. They were very clean when they went to see the emperor, very elegant, sophisticated people. They had spent years studying sutras, studying discipline, very polished. Perhaps they spoke very fluent Chinese, Mandarin, and when they were presented at court, they had good manners, and they were basically philosophers. When the emperor would ask them a question, they would reply in detail. They would say, well, you know, what is the basis of Buddhism? And they would say, well, in this sutra, the Lord Buddha taught this. And what he meant by this is in the commentary written by so-and-so, by this great monk. And we have Abhidharma, Buddhist psychology, and we have a commentary on the Abhidharma, and we have so on and so on. And Emperor Wu really loved this approach. It stimulated his mind. He lost himself in a world of ideas, images, beautiful forms, and felt very alive and believed that this was the path. So one day, he was told that a monk named Putitamo, Bodhidharma, Daruma, was going to come to the court and deliver some kind of a talk or lecture on a traditional practice in India known as jhana, or chan, or zen. So he was probably preparing for a very learned talk from a very senior monk. And to his surprise, this monk shows up. Maybe I always think of Daruma, Putitamo, in very plain robe, very simple, maybe patches on his robe. Not elegant person, not refined person, very ordinary looking monk. If you've seen the pictures of Daruma, of Putitamo, he's often represented with a kind of a scruffy beard, and sometimes he has an earring in his ear. He looks, if you're from the West, if you're from Europe, he looks like a pirate a little bit. But he's a rough character, a little bit uncultured maybe, a little bit not the kind of person who would flatter you to get your approval. And so he comes before the emperor, and he's not at all what the emperor expected, maybe a polished, elegant, learned person. And the emperor says, what is the first principle of the holy teachings? See, the emperor has a good heart. He's a good person, and he wants to be awakened. So his question is very respectful and intelligent. It's not a flippant question. It's not a disrespectful, or it's not the kind of question that an uncaring or a crude-spirited person would ask. Very good question. He says to the monk, what is the first principle of this beautiful holy path called Buddhism? And then Putitamo, Daruma, surprises him, because he doesn't say, well, let me explain. And in fact, he doesn't even say, I'll tell you about the holy teachings. He says, emptiness, no holiness. Emptiness, no holiness. This is a shocking thing for him to say, and the way he says it is also shocking. It really surprises the emperor, and the emperor is a person of great intelligence and sensitivity. So he's asked Putitamo an honest question. He's asked Daruma an honest question. Tell me about the holy teachings. I personally believe that there is nothing more precious in this whole universe than Chan, than the way of this beautiful path that I have learned from my teachers. And I think the emperor must feel the same way. This is very precious, very holy, very special. This is really the path to freedom and awakening. And he knows that. And he says to Putitamo, tell me about how you understand this beautiful path. But then what Putitamo does is so shocking. He says, nothing is holy, no holiness. Don't talk to me about holy. Great emptiness, great emptiness. Mu-shin, mu-shin, mu-shin.
ooshing, great emptiness. Now, you have to understand who the emperor is. He's a good person. He's built temples. He's endowed monasteries for monks and nuns. He has created hospitals to help the sick. He's built schools to educate, all to make his kingdom better. Good heart, has a good heart. And all of these things are important. All of these actions are important. But Putitamo says something rather shocking. He says, nothing matters. None of that matters. Fundamentally, just wuxing. Just wuxing. The emperor is speechless for a moment. And then he says, who are you? Who are you? Now, it's hard to know whether his question is just shock, like, who the heck are you? Or he may be asking Putitamo a deeper question. He may be asking him, he has great intelligence, so he may be saying, his Dharma eye is a little bit open, and he says, wait a minute, what is this talk of wuxing? Who are you? Who are you? That's a very good question. Who are you? That's a koan. Who is this standing before me? Not knowing, who are you? See, this is a deep exchange. And Putitamo says, wuxing, wuxing. The emperor did not grasp his meaning. The emperor did not understand this teaching of wuxing. Thereupon, Putitamo crossed the river and went to the land of Wei. Now, we know the story after that. What happens is that Daruma, Putitamo, goes to the land of Wei. He goes to live in a cave and practice Chan, practice the Wei, for 9 years by himself. And then one day, a student shows up to study with him. First one student, then two students, and three students. Two men and one woman become his students, become his Dharma heirs, and wake up under his guidance. Now, this is quite an interesting story because this man has come all the way from India to teach Buddhism. He meets the emperor. The emperor totally misunderstands what he's saying. Now, instead of going back to his hotel and getting depressed, or instead of deciding he's going to try to get written up in the newspapers or get on TV so he can get students, he does a strange thing. He just goes up into the mountains and he finds a cave and sits in a cave. He doesn't try to find any students. He doesn't try to make himself known. He just goes and sits in a cave. People in the area hear about this strange man who lives in a cave. And they figure he is some kind of Taoist saint, some kind of Taoist practitioner, and they respect what he's doing. So they bring food to his cave. They bring rice and vegetables for him to eat. And so for 9 years, he sits in front of a wall and practices Piquan. Piquan. He sits in front of the wall for 9 years, and then his students begin to show up. They just show up. And later, a great monastery, Shaolin Monastery, would be founded near where he practiced. But back at the emperor's palace, the emperor is, as I said, not a crude person. Very sensitive, very sincere person. And he can't sleep. You know, it's just this, he must interview lots of people. If you're the emperor of China, you have to do a lot. You have to interview people all day long. They come in, they have problems with government, problems with the environment, problems with education, And so this monk must have been just one person among many who came to see him that day. But he can't get Putitamo out of his mind. Something, he knows something about this experience was important. So he asks his advisor, a monk named Shiko. Later, the emperor spoke of this to Shiko, who said, "Do you in fact know who this person is?" There's that question again. Who are you? He says, "Your Highness, do you know who this person was?" The emperor said, "Well," he said, "Ushin." And then Shiko knows. Shiko seems to know. He says, "That was the Bodhisattva Guanyin. That was Kanon, the bearer of the Buddha's heart seal," like in the Heart Sutra. The emperor, it's like a stabbed in his heart. The emperor thinks, "Oh no, that was the essence, that was it." And he burns with regret, and he wants to send for Putitamo. But Shiko says, "It's no good sending a messenger to fetch him back, even if all the people, went. If we went to his cave and we could find him, he still wouldn't return." This is very famous teaching. This is the beginning of Chan in China. Begins with failure, and that's very interesting. All the other monks and nuns in the court lived a beautiful life. You know, the emperor took care of them. He gave them fine robes every year. He made sure they were warm in the winter and cool in the summer. Fresh rice. You know, plenty of publicity, so on and so on. But Putitamo, meanwhile, lived up in a cave. Poor people brought him rice, maybe not fresh rice, but some rice, vegetables, maybe like roots, maybe he ate acorns, who knows. And practiced for years and years, every day getting up and sitting in front of the wall, Piquan, in front of this blank stone wall. And this is how Chan took root in China. And Chan was like a mighty tree. It took deep root in China. And long after foreign invaders had destroyed Buddhism in India, this mighty tree survived in China. It grew and grew. Its roots went into Japan, Korea, Vietnam. Very, very deep practice in China. So this is story. It's a very strange story, if you think about it. You know, when people talk about what they believe in, they want to tell a story about success and growth and victory. This is a story about defeat. I think that's so interesting. The emperor is left all alone and disappointed. He says, "You know, we've got to go get him." Shiko says, "Don't even try. He's gone, gone, gone. Nothing can bring it back." This seems so sad. But not so sad, I think. Wonderful story. Really wonderful. This morning, we recited the Heart Sutra, Hanya Shingyo. Maka Hanya Haramita Shingyo. Goes like this. Shariputra asks Avalokiteshvara Guanyin Kanon. How can we achieve liberation and enlightenment? And Guanyin says, Shariputra, we must see the natural emptiness of all phenomena. Form is empty, and emptiness is form. Emptiness is not something separate from form, and form is not something separate from emptiness. Feeling, perception, even consciousness itself are all empty. All forms of being are fundamentally emptiness and have no characteristics whatsoever. Enlightened mind is unborn and undying. It is not pure or impure, holy or profane. It neither grows nor shrinks. It neither wins nor loses. Thus there is no form, no feeling, no sight, no thought, no eye, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no appearance, no sound, no smell, no taste, no sensation, no ideas, nor is there any such thing as hearing well or hearing poorly, or of being wise or being stupid. There is no suffering, and there is no cause of suffering. There is no end of suffering, and no way to end suffering. There is no wisdom, there is no attainment, there is no failure to attain. Buddhas and bodhisattvas awaken through prajna paramita, transcendental wisdom. Gone. Gone, gone, and now fully awake. Yate, 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 gone, gone, and now, here, right now, fully awake. This, O Shariputra, is the path to awakening. So Putitamo is answering the emperor's question in the most profound way, most profound answer. The emperor is a good person, has a good heart, true commitment. And Putitamo sees his good heart, and his heart is full of love, of loving kindness for the emperor. So he doesn't want to give the emperor anything but the truth. So the emperor says, tell me about Chan. Tell me about the Buddha's path to liberation. And so he tells him the truth. He says, Wuxin is the path to liberation. Nothing else. Wuxin. Wuxin. Muxin. The emperor is suddenly knocked for a loop. His mind is blank. See? He's stunned. Stunned. There was a great Zen master from Japan named Soyen Shaku. Soyen Shaku came to the World Parliament in Chicago in 1901. There was a scholar, American scholar, who was very interested in Buddhism. His name was Paul Keras, and he did many early English translations of Buddhist literature in the United States. One of his students was D.T. Suzuki. Paul Keras organized the World Parliament of Religions, and he tried to get people from all the world religions to come to Chicago and talk about their beliefs. And he thought if people could get together, they might find common threads or common truth. So he invited Soyen Shaku to come, and Soyen Shaku was one of the last speakers. He was not a very charismatic person, the star of the World Conference of Religions was a very charismatic Vedanta teacher, Hindu teacher, very, very charismatic, very handsome, very eloquent and well-spoken, very polished. Everybody was in love with him. Soyan Shaku was a little like Putitamo, a little bit like Daruma. He was sort of very beautifully dressed, but very plain-spoken, very simple, very direct, and he just said the truth. He said, you know, the problem with modern people is that they don't know how to be dumbfounded. Dumbfounded. In English, dumbfounded means you don't have a thing in your head right now. See, and we think that's stupid. And when he said that, when Soyan Shaku said, the problem with modern people is they don't know how to be dumbfounded, the audience burst into laughter. They thought it was a mistake, a mistranslation. But this was deep truth. See, modern people believe so much in ideas, so much in ideas as the path to liberation. But he was trying to tell them ideas are really rather trivial. You know, humans have only awareness of a little tiny piece of the universe. I was just reading the other day that the physicists now say there are 10 dimensions. It's interesting. In Buddhism, we have 10 directions. But in physics now, they say 10 dimensions. Humans are only aware of four of them, right? We have, the spatial dimensions, and then we have time. And even time, we're only aware of very dimly, actually. There are apparently 6 other dimensions we can't experience at all because our senses are too crude. So, you know, the universe is much bigger than human understanding. It's a very, very important point. We constantly conceptualize the universe in terms of our own assumptions about it, our own fears and attachments. We don't get the full picture. The truth is that we don't even get the full picture just within the four dimensions that we have. Last night we had a beginner's class here in this room, and I was explaining that people very seldom live in the moment. You know, the truth is that we're almost always in a kind of fantasy realm in our minds. So when you wake up in the morning, you know, you think about your breakfast, and you think about it maybe the first thing is when you wake up, or your job or something. You don't hear the birds, you don't see the sunlight on the floor, already in mental realm. And you eat your breakfast and you're thinking about something later in the day. Go through the whole day and very seldom really are you in the moment, see. And all of human knowledge is built by people who live like this. All of human culture, all of human knowledge is like half-truth. It's a little piece of truth, but just a little piece, half. The other part of the picture is missing, the bigger part of the picture. It's like we see, we have right hand, but not left hand of the world. So we have a very false view, at any rate, of reality. And human conceptions are really very trivial. Ideas, images, these are important to us and they have their place, but they really don't set us free. At least that's what Chan teaches. You know, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but sometimes things happen to us that are so difficult to adjust to that nothing can make us feel better. It's very interesting, you know. For example, if you're in real pain, if you have real pain, you know, I remember one of the most painful things that ever happened to me was breaking my arm. When I was a kid, I was running down the road in the winter on some ice, and I slipped and I broke my arm, actually in several places. And it was I still remember the pain, you know. And the interesting thing is, you know, nothing can make that pain go away, no idea can make that pain go away. If you're a philosopher and you break your arm, very difficult to stop the pain with your philosophy, your idea, or images, beautiful images that you hold in your mind just melt away in the presence of real pain. This is true when you sit as well, you know. When you're doing zazen and your legs begin to hurt, one of the things you can try, please feel free to try this as an experiment, is to tell yourself a little story in your head. And what you'll find is that the story doesn't work, that the pain in your legs keeps coming back. Even if the story's a good one, or if you try to remember something from your childhood, or you think of maybe you're sitting and you're thinking of a nice ice cream sundae, something like that, you know, while your legs, it won't work. It melts away like this, you know. And I think that's very interesting. It shows that ideas are very shallow. They don't really have much importance for us, really. They're like toys we play with. And they help a little bit. They help if you want to know how to calculate something, you need algorithms, or you need calculus. If you want to know when a building was built, you need to go to architectural records or history. So it's got its place, but the truth is very shallow. Years ago, I was in graduate school, and I was teaching English, my first semester as a teacher, and I did everything wrong. Everything. It was absolutely awful. My students, I think, thought the course was a joke, and they questioned my competence. And I was so worried about it. You know, when you're a beginning teacher, you really want to be excellent, and if you're not excellent, it eats you up. So I remember being so worried about this. I was grading papers, and I was getting so depressed. And I decided to go to the zoo. I needed a break, so I went to the zoo. And I was sitting there thinking about what a failure I was as a teacher. And all of a sudden, I heard this roar. It was a lion roaring. And the lion was just, rah, rah. And it was amazing. You know, my hair stood on end. And I felt so dumbfounded. I just felt so dumbfounded. It was like everything was blown away. And at once, I felt better. I felt so alive. I was so grateful to that lion. And unfortunately, he didn't do that all the time. So that wasn't the best solution, but it was a beautiful gift, you know. Also, you know, sometimes I would be walking down the street in Seattle, and I would look up and I would see Mount Rainier. If you know Seattle, there is a huge mountain south of Seattle. It's one of the biggest mountains in the world. It's so huge that you can't see the base of the mountain. It's like Mount Fuji in Japan. It's like Fuji-san. It just floats in the sky, and it's huge. And the city looks so huge. But when you look at Mount Rainier, the city looks teeny weeny. All your concerns, all your fears just seem like tiny, tiny little problems. It's like the lion's roar. It just leaves you dumbfounded. It's, you know, sometimes we get this when we go out into nature. You know, you go out into, if you see the Grand Canyon in the United States, people go to see the Grand Canyon. I'll never forget going to see the Grand Canyon in the snow. And it's so immense. It's like, it's just infinitely vast and deep. And all your problems just blow away in the cold wind. This is like Zen. Zen, this is Wuxin. It's Wuxin. See, at first, you know, maybe Ushin seems a little sad. It's like the emperor. He says, well, where did Bodhidharma go? Where did Daruma go? He's gone, Your Majesty, and you can't get him back. And then you could see the emperor, he's a good man, and he sits down, maybe he wants to cry. But he's the emperor, he can't cry in front of all his administrators. But he feels sad for a minute, you know. But then, you know, Putitamo is gone, gone. Everything's blown away, see. And you know, they don't tell you what happened to the emperor next, but maybe he suddenly felt so alive, so free. He had screwed up totally. See, Bodhidharma, Putitamo screwed up maybe. Maybe yes, maybe no. But the emperor screwed up. The emperor made a big mistake. You know, we all make mistakes in life. We want to do the right thing. We try so hard and then we screw up. This is a human condition. And then we can hate ourselves, we can become afraid, we can become critical of others, we can become cynical, we can drink, we can take drugs, whatever. But you know, there's better medicine. It's Ushin. And if you take this, may you forgive yourself. I forgive I made a mistake. The emperor, if he just, Your Highness, Putitamo is gone. And then it's like, oh, my heart is aching. He was the great teacher and he's gone. Gone, gone. Now there's just nothing. Just Ushin. Suddenly, free, free, alive. See, all of our dreams, all of our fears are like an illusion, like a kingdom of illusion. We need to live there. Humans need a house of dreams to live in. But our house of dreams is also our prison unless we can cultivate Ushin. Even in the body, you know, our body becomes blocked. Our bodies become knotted, like knots inside the body, knots inside the mind. We've tied those knots all our life. This is our karma. You know, you break your arm, maybe you hold your arm to one side, you're afraid to use your arm, you know. Maybe somebody hits you, and you always are careful when you walk through the world because you're expecting to be hit. You know, it affects the way your body works, affects the way your mind works. You know? So we're all become prisoner of our fears and our dreams and our attachments. But when you live in Ushin, it's like medicine. All of the knots begin to become untied, and the beautiful life energy can just flow through your body and your mind. Beautiful chi, ki, energy, life just flows through you. The great Japanese teacher Dogen, Ehe, said, you know, to practice the way is to cultivate the self. To cultivate the self is to forget the self. And he means Ushin. And in Ushin, just pure life energy flows and flows and flows without life, without birth, and without death, forever and ever. Beautiful. This is what we really are. See, of course, as soon as we name it, we make a knot, we tie a knot. Better not to name it. Better just to say, Ushin, who are you? Who are you?
Mo. Mo.
Who are you? Oh. Oh.
Oh.
It's a life energy. It's like the lion's roar. Lion's roar. Beautiful life energy flowing through our bodies. So, you know, Putitamo is gone. Oh, he'll never come back.
maybe the emperor suddenly felt so alive, so alive.
Emperor Wu of Liang asked Pu Ti Tamo, "What is the first principle of the holy teachings?" Pu Ti Tamo said, "I love you. I'm going to tell you the truth. Don't cling to anything. Live in Wuxing." "Who is this? Who are you?" He says, "I was never..." See, "I personally have a birth and a death. My name is Pu..." Doesn't say, "My name is Pu Ti Tamo. I come from Karnataka. I was born in 623 Common Era. I will die." And he says, that's a personal self. It's very important, but it's a flower. The root is deeper. See, the true self is, has no birth, no death, just this beautiful life energy. It says, "Who are you standing before me?" "Wuxing. Wuxing." Or actually just "Wu." "Mu." The emperor did not grasp his meaning. That's good, not bad. See, he enters immediately into a natural condition. Our natural condition is Wuxing. But he doesn't understand it yet. See, this is what happens to everybody. People come in here for beginning Zazen. They sit on the cushion and they watch their breath for a little while and the mind becomes calm. Sooner or later, suddenly, nothing. People think, "Oh, what was that all about? Meaningless, empty, pointless." See, Westerners, modern people are so crude. Ancient people understood at once that this was true nature, real freedom. Wei Yang heard the Diamond Sutra recited and his mind instantly became blank. And when it became Wuxing, he had great awakening experience all at once. And this is because ancient people were not so deceived by form, by idea and emotion. Wei Yang instantly woke up. Emperor, like most normal people of sensitivity and intelligence, encounters Wuxing immediately but doesn't know what to do with it. Doesn't know that he should stay in it. This is true home of a human heart. So he doesn't get it. "Who is this standing before me?" "Ooh." The emperor did not grasp his meaning. He enters fundamental enlightened mind but can't appreciate it. His senses are too crude. It's like a person going into a deep cave. His eyes have not adjusted. Thereupon, Pu Ti Tamo actually tries to teach him one more time. Really, what he does is he says, "I'll show you one more time what Chan is all about." So he leaves the room. And the emperor can't sleep. He says, "What was that? Who was that?" But Shiko knows. He says, "That was Guan Yin. Guan Yin. Wuxing is Guan Yin. Wuxing is Guan Yin." The emperor was full of regret and wanted to send for Bodhidharma, but Shiko said, "It's no good. He's gone. Gone. Now, wake up." This is, I believe, 100% true. This morning we also recited the Xin Jin Mei. "The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against anything. The way is perfect like vast space. Nothing is lacking, and nothing is in excess." for the unified mind in accord with the way, all self-centered striving ceases. Doubts and irresolutions vanish, and life in true faith is possible. With a single stroke, wuxin, we are freed from all bondage. Now, the man, I can never forget, you know, the man who wrote these beautiful lines had leprosy. See, I always think of this man, Saint San, writing this with his nose gone and maybe only a couple fingers left. So it must have been very frightening to see this monk with leprosy writing these lines with his brush. Maybe he had to hold his brush with his toes. This is what happens to people who have leprosy. You know, most people who have leprosy, you know, maybe feel like life has cheated them. But that's because I don't know. I don't have leprosy, but a human response would be to say, this is unfair, this is not right, this is unjust, life stinks, etc., etc. But if you dwell in the small self, you know, that may be the conclusion you will reach about life, almost inevitable. But Saint San knew, don't live in small self. As often as you can, please live in wuxin. And then, great way is not difficult. Beautiful path, beautiful path. Every day is a good day. Even the day when you die is a good day if you live in wuxin. So this is the essence of Chan, essence of Zen. Zen begins with failure. Zen begins with disappointment. Zen begins with the great teacher leaving the scene of the crime. And this is the best beginning for Chan in China. This is why China became the home of Chan, deep roots, because from the start, just wuxin. Most of us are too crude to practice with this purity. So we need form, we need altar, we need to bow many, many times, always bow to your cushion. Cultivate resolution, determination, and gratitude for this beautiful path. But when you sit on your cushion, watch your breath with your whole heart. When your mind becomes empty, jump in, please.